You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the Just One Outdoors Podcast. Today, we're doing a few new things. Cam got called into a meeting for something city, engineering, all of that. I don't know the correct terms, but he's away tonight. So Deegan has stepped in to fill his role. As you guys know, Deegan has just recently joined our team. We're excited about that. And in the future, you're going to see some of the guys on our team start appearing as some guest co-hosts in episodes. We're still working through all the details of that, but we're really excited for that. Also wanted to give a quick shout out to a few of our, partners. Beatty Custom Calls. He's actually also joined our team, but makes some great turkey calls. One Stringer Arrow Wraps, Fit to Hunt, and Domain Outdoors. All of those are great companies that we work with, and there's links in our episodes, on our YouTube, Linktree, all of that. Go check them out if you need anything from arrow wraps to food plot seed. They've got it all. And tonight, I'm excited to welcome, I've really only known him as the Hunting Challenge because that's all I've known him on Instagram, but excited to welcome John. He really what intrigued me a while back with his account and made me go, I want to follow this guy, is I watched, I think it was his first YouTube video, and he talked about how he was kind of incorporating hunting into his life. And then just through that, it's a quick video. If you have the time, go watch it. It's like 2 or 3 minutes. But through that, I've seen not only on his page or on the Hunting Challenge page do you see this outdoor content, but you see a family guy, a worship leader, or maybe a worship leader involved in worship, just all of that. Really great guy. Finally get to connect with him. May not, as we were talking earlier, may not be a big buck slayer, but none of us are really. I mean, let's be honest, none of us are. But John, Deegan, welcome to the show. Glad to have you both. So yeah, John, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, well, man, I appreciate it. I was really wondering why you guys were going to have me on, but hey, it's like a testimony. You're just telling your story, right, Austin? So
absolutely.
Of how we came to met. And we had some like banter going back and forth through Instagram and everything like that. We've kind of like kept ties. Mm-hmm. So I live in a small town of about 3,500 people. It was a one-stop light town, but I think maybe 5 or 6 years ago, maybe more, they put in another stoplight. But anyway, it's a small town. In fact, we have, just outside of my town, we have the largest, longest running rodeo east of the Mississippi called Cowtown Rodeo. So when people think New Jersey, I went to school down in North Carolina, Catawba College, and everybody thought because I was from New Jersey, it was all asphalt. And that's a story for another time, but they never thought somebody from New Jersey knew how to fish or hunt or anything like that. So, but I got my start, back, I guess when I was like 12 or 13, I worked down the road when we lived in Mannington, the outskirts of Woodstown. We had a house with some good property. And my dad befriended a farmer down the street, and me and my brothers started working, quote unquote, but working for that farmer. I mean, we're talking like for $2 bills and, you know, different things like that. And that work could be, you know, baling hay, just moving horses a quarter mile down the street by lead, shoveling stalls, whatever, mowing the lawn, whatever it was. But it was good. It was responsibility. And it was that farmer that really got me into hunting. I would follow him for small game and stuff like that. And eventually my dad ended up getting me a Mossberg pump shotgun. And that was for my 13th. I want to say that was for my 13th birthday. And obviously did the hunter safety course. And then I hunted a small game. I went out shotgun hunting, had no luck the first couple of years doing shotgun hunting. And then I learned about It's funny. I was working with, the name of the farmer was Jimmy. Jimmy had a friend that would hunt his property, and he showed up at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon one day. He's like, man, he's like, I just came off of work. Is there any, like, can I roll around some manure or something like that? I need some cover sand. What? I'm like, what is this guy doing? He's like, he's going bow hunting. And it's like early October. I'm like, wait, you can hunt in October. Like, I didn't know anything of that. Cause it was like my dad was supportive, and, you know, my parents were supportive of what I'd like to do from the outdoor aspect. I mean, we had a small pond on our piece of property, so I would camp out there and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, okay. But I was always an early bird if I wasn't camping by the pond or anything like that. But, so I learned, you know, there's more to hunting than just that week of shotgun hunting in the first week of December in New Jersey. So, my dad would run a friend of mine, Randy, up to, take the classes to get the hunter education for bow hunting. So I think I want to say I was 15, 16, somewhere in that range where I first started bow hunting.
Okay.
And I totally just fell in love with bow hunting. Of course, I can remember it probably wasn't the first hunt, but the first time I ever like made a shot, took shots on deer. And I mean, it was one sit. I probably shot like four times and missed. And that's when it was with a compound, and you had the iron sights. You had the iron sights where you had to put like, you had to touch it up with, you know, whatever nail polish or whatever, just to make it look a little bit better. And from then I was kind of just hooked, and I hunted, all, you know, the rest through high school, you know, killed some does, maybe by mistake, some button bucks and stuff like that. Went away to college, hunted a little bit in college. And then after college, I got married, and, my wife at that time, my father-in-law was a big hunter. And long story short, like I just mentioned, I went to school down in North Carolina. So it took me a while to get my degree and everything. So several years later, six years later, I come back, I meet this girl. Her dad now was hunting the same property that I grew up hunting, which is kind of like, wow. So yeah, he and I started hunting together, out at that property, the same property, which I grew up hunting. But even at that time, it was just like, okay, where are you going to go? Like nothing with like taking into wind, no you know, transition, like how are the deer transitioning during the season, all that stuff. And again, it was like, because my father-in-law at that time was big into like permanent stands. Yeah. They would go out during the summer, build them, cover them up, you know, as far as like trying to make them look, you know, put branches and stuff on them. And I went and got I went and bought a climber. I don't know if I'm ADD, ADH, whatever that is, but I don't know if I am. I just knew that like it just made sense. Like I see deer moving here. They're out of bow range. I need to get closer. How do I do that? Okay. Go get a climber.
Yeah.
So I went and got a climber, and I started having more success. You know, I would say a good buck for Jersey stakes. I mean, let's just call it if you want to score them, I've never scored a buck, but let's just say it's 100, and, got those. So I was good on getting meat and everything along those lines. And then, my wife and I at that time ended up getting divorced, and hunting kind of fell to the backside at that point in my life for about, I don't know, an eight year period. And then I moved back to New Jersey because I was living in Delaware at the time. We got divorced. I moved back and, started going to the church where my mom and my stepdad, because my dad passed away in 99. So my stepdad and my mom were going to this church and, met a hunter. And he's like, hey, come on out. And it 2 years of, hey, come on out. I finally went out. So this is like my first time out. I think it was November 17th. It was the first cold snap where it was like 15 degrees. I'm like, I'm sitting all day. So I haven't hunted in 10 years. And I was like, I'm going to
sit all day.
And I was like, if I'm going to do it, like I, I told you guys offline, if I'm doing something, I'm going. I go all in. So I'm like, I did. And I prepared. I had the same compound that I was using before, and I had it tuned up, and you know, everything was good to go. I was shooting and all that stuff. I always took that part serious. And at 9:30, a big wide 8-pointer, which would have been my biggest buck at the time, came in, and I shot right over his back. Oh. And you know what? I was like, are he? And like, as I'm talking to you guys, I'm smiling. Like, just imagine, I release the arrow, goes over its back, and I'm smiling. Like, are you serious? I wasn't even upset. I'm like, I'm hooked. I'm back. Thank you, Lord. Like this, you know, this is a blessing. This is a confirmation. And this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I always knew it was. It was just, man, when people go through hard times, man, there's like, you got to prioritize different things to get you out of that, that hole, you know what I mean? So
absolutely.
Anyway, so that's kind of where it is. And then I just started, when I came back to hunting, I was like, I'm not just going to go willy nilly, dude. My time is way too valuable. I got to figure it out. And I kind of just started, I stumbled upon Dan Infault, the Hunting Public, and just started getting super mobile. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I guess kind of the rest is history from there.
Yeah. You want to hear a crazy story about the Hunting Public that I just heard this weekend? I met a guy who applied for like their internship or like their cameraman internship, and he ended up getting beat out by someone, but he made the top five. And he got a call like 2 months after that, I think it was, to come up to Iowa to their like farm or whatever they have up there and turkey hunt with them. So he literally, he got to hunt with the Hunting Public, and he was like, yo, those guys, like, you see how passionate and crazy they are in their videos. But he's like, they had granola bars, and from sun up to sundown, we were chasing turkey. And one thing that stood out is he said they never got down. Like, if a turkey busted them, or like he said, there were probably 6 or 7 times where turkey were like 100 yards, 50 to 100 yards, and just not in a shooting range. And they would bust, and these guys would be like, well, all right, let's mosey over here and let's see if we can get on one. And they just never got down. But I was just like, seriously, you got to hunt with the Hunting Public? I think that's a dream of just about every hunter, is to go get the opportunity to hunt with them.
That's certainly a blessing. But the big takeaway, like Austin, you nailed it, is it's oftentimes, I mean, I should back it up and say, very few, if any, times you will see discouragement when you watch those guys, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the greatest takeaways you can take away from their videos, like the mental side of things during a hunt is, in my opinion, a huge benefit if you can keep it in your favor. Huge benefit. But the opportunity to go out, like, that'd be awesome.
Absolutely,
that'd be awesome to go out and just experience it with those guys who are really, you know, no different than, you know, the three of us that are just able to go out there and enjoy life the way that they wanted to do on their terms. And the other thing is, they have plenty of property because of the public. So a lot of people get hung up like, oh, well, I blew that deer out, my season's over. It's like, whoa, buddy.
Yeah.
Whoa, buddy. You got a lot to learn on that one thing. But
I've been turkey hunting for quite a while. That was one thing I've always kind of done. But this year, Austin actually invited me out to a pizza public to go chase turkeys with him. And turkeys in Missouri, they're a pretty good challenge anyway, at least nowadays. I mean, coyotes, coons, we can get into a whole podcast alone about all that. But they shut up real quick and everything. And I had already killed one bird, my bird for the first week. And he reached out. I was like, you know what? Yeah, that can be kind of a unique challenge. I've never really chased them on public land before. Let's go see if we can do this. It's pretty unpressured. And there was a lot of gobbles that morning that I was actually really surprised to hear. And they were responding more than a lot of birds I had already seen that year. So there is obviously opportunities there as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, just keeping that positive mindset, even in adversity, I think is big.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
So I definitely forgot to hit record on the Riverside app. I have hit record on every other app, but don't worry. I've hit record now so that we can get the social media influencer part of this, but I have everything else recorded on my other devices.
Oh my goodness. All right. Because we use Riverside too. I'm like, wait, there's no, how you get past that countdown, man?
Well, see,
a lot of the guests that we have on, they're like, oh my gosh, that countdown kind of gave me like a little bit of stress.
That it was up in the top left corner and it just said record and it had the red circle. And I guess when I was hitting everything, I was like, oh, it's recording. Nope, it wasn't.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Anyways, back on topic now that I've, you know, this is the second time ever. This is you'll be our 74th episode. And it's the second time ever I've forgot to hit record, but at least I have backup, so that's good. I had to re-record an entire episode one
backup
time.
Backup is good.
Always.
But if you want to take this to YouTube, man, you definitely got to hit the record button on Riverside app.
Right. But I wanted to ask you, you know, you kind of told us how you got into hunting and then back into hunting. What sparked the hunting challenge, and then also kind of what led you to doing a podcast and getting into podcasting?
Okay, yeah, good question. So I think what sparked the hunting challenge is, I think number one, that I was one of many, this is my head speaking.
Yeah.
One of many people that, I was looking at, you know, like I said, I mentioned earlier what Dan Infault was doing, what the hunting public was doing. And, I'm one who's fairly easily sold. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So if it makes sense and it's something, if it's something that I can believe in and I think I can do, I'm going to do it. I'm all in. And so I was kind of thinking, like, there's probably a lot of people out there, you know, around my age. I'm older. I'm 49. So it's like, that might be giving up on this thing. Because I was close to, like, never doing it again.
Wow.
Like, which I, like, think saying that now just, it hurts. You know, because I absolutely love it so much. But the reason why I love it is because I changed my mindset, changed my style, my approach. It's more of a chess match, or chess game. And it's not just like, oh, let me pick this stand because I saw a deer there 3 weeks ago, type of thing. Or, well, I'll go to this stand because he's at that stand. Or, I mean, there's actually strategy,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm a competitive guy. I played sports, football primarily, most of my life, and I love X's and O's, and that's what it became to me. So the hunting challenge, I can remember like talking to my current wife and my oldest daughter from my first marriage, like, what should I call this thing? I kind of regret saying the hunting challenge, but because, like, you know, you got the hunting public and then the hunting challenge and I didn't even think of that, but it is the hunting challenge extends way beyond hunting because it's the challenge of life. It's a challenge of juggling family. It's a challenge of juggling work and getting out there and, you know, all these different things. But, I think that's the main reason why, or how the hunting challenge came about, just how to overcome adversity to give yourself the best opportunities. And I can honestly say, I mean, and there's no shame in the fact, like, we said offline, the last 2 years I've put arrows through three bucks that would be, that would have been my biggest bucks. And even with all efforts to find these deer, meaning dogs and everything like that, I have not put my hands on them. And that has been so very, very tough to, that's part of the hunting challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And these situations have, you know, could have very easily said, just throw in the towel, dude. You're done. But the other side of the coin is like, you figure something out.
Yeah.
You figure something out. Now it's just a matter of like closing the deal. And I listened to many, many podcasts, and I often hear people say getting that first one is the hardest, meaning like big buck, whatever you want to put your big buck score your big buck is, whatever that is, like getting that first one is the hardest. But once you get it, it's like you figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I am in this hunting journey. And I call it a journey. I don't look at it like a competition amongst other hunters. I never have, never will. But it's a competition against my God given skills, against a creature that we've been given the blessing and the man to go hunt.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I look at it.
I like that view. You know,
and I forget the other part of your question.
I'll circle back to it. I was just going to say, like, man, I just commend you for, you know, pushing through these last three seasons of sending an arrow at a deer. And all of a sudden, you know, you search, you can't find it, because this year I shot at a buck, shot and killed a buck that had velvet on opening day here. And as I released my arrow, you know, this deer was standing like perfectly still for a good minute. And I'm, you know, getting the range and making sure everything's good and, you know, waiting for it to take one more step. Takes out one more step. And then it, like, as I released my arrow, it like moves forward quick. And, you know, I was dead on at the lungs, but then him moving forward, I gut shot this deer. And I went down there, couldn't find any blood, backed out, got dogs the next morning and went through that whole process. Mm-hmm. Ended up finding him like 50 yards away up a hill. So I was very fortunate, but that whole night, I entered like a kind of depression almost. Like, I didn't eat that night.
Absolutely.
And I just, because it's not any hunter, it's not our heart to hurt, wound an animal. You know, we want it to be quick, clean, effective. And, you know, the thought that I just injured this deer and I didn't know what it was going through, you know, we have coyotes, all that stuff. Yeah. It wrecked me. So for that to happen 3 years in a row, and, you know, I'm not saying by any means that it's your fault. It's just like, I can't even imagine like going through that and then saying, you know what? I can still do this. I've got this. And I really commend you for that. That's awesome. Like, because that's part of hunting. Like you said, it's part of the hunting challenge, is you're going to make a bad shot. You're going to have your arrow clip, you know, a limb and hit the leg or hit something. It's part of it. And that I just really commend you for that.
I think it's also, I appreciate that. I mean, I think it's like on offline, you mentioned that buck in 2020. That was, I should say, all these bucks were lethal shots.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of the challenge was in locating that is permission to continue the search beyond the property that you're allowed to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did find out actually recently, it's not confirmed yet, but that 2020 buck that I have that video on where he's walking away and I'm like, please don't go up there, whatever. And I just was told like, oh yeah, somebody got that buck 2 weeks later. I'm like, oh man, send me the pictures. Like, I just want closure.
Yeah.
I just want closure, you know?
Absolutely.
Because Cause yeah, that was a buck that there were no like trail camera pictures of. I mean, we call him ghosts because it is like out of nowhere. He's coming, and we went out there with the dog, like normally in my experience at impact, you don't have blood until maybe 15, 20 yards, depending on like,
yeah,
that's my experience. I had blood, very good blood, like at 10 yards. I'm like, oh, this deer's dead. Everybody, yeah. Oh, this deer's dead. This deer's dead. And, it was dead, but 2 weeks later after somebody else shot it, which, you know what? Thank you. Like, because that deer, I mean, it was a good one. But anyway, thank you for that. And it's important to know, like, especially like this day and age with social media, people are like, oh, you're out there wounding deer, blah, blah, you shouldn't even be hunting. You know what? Whatever.
You go try to do it.
I wanted to go say go F yourself, but you know what
I mean? I mean,
that's the reality of it. Like when you decide to take the step to go from going at, because in my experience, like I want to shoot does, and now like what I've witnessed, like going after more mature bucks are they don't really want to hang out with people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why my doe number harvests are down. So I have to like really take the opportunity to say, okay, this is doe specific property, which is why this year I spread a web to go hunt, start doing a lot more public land.
Mm-hmm.
For that reason. It is a struggle, man. Like, I get very, very emotional. And I think that's what a lot of people outside the hunting community don't understand, like how much respect we have for the game that we chase.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I would
go ahead, Deegan.
I was going to say, I would go as far as just to say, most people, or most hunters, have more respect for the wildlife and conservation than anybody. We have a deeper understanding for it a lot of times just because we spend so much time in it. This is how we decompress. This is how we relieve stress, everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's just a huge thing, is we care so much about it. And you wounding two deer, I mean, anybody who's bow hunted, everybody says it. I listen to the Hoyt bow hunting podcast a lot. Even those guys say, you're going to make a bad shot. Yeah. It's inevitable. It doesn't matter how you go about it. Sometimes you rush it. Sometimes you just, your hand moves weird. Sometimes you took a shot that you thought was closer that wasn't. I mean, stuff happens. I mean, I've made bad shots, and I've been bow hunting for going on 13 years now. So it's just one of those deals. It's going to happen inevitably. And I commend you for showing that part, because a lot of hunting groups and hunting industries won't. They don't want people to see them making bad shots and stuff like that. So it shows that you're real.
Yeah, and in that particular situation, like, it was very clear that buck bedded up. So it was I shot it at 7:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. We didn't go back and track it till 9 o'clock that night, I think, roughly. But it was very clear from the pile of blood and everything that the deer did bed up at one point in time, but was kicked out of that bed.
Yeah.
And that could be from another hunt. Now, this is private property. It could be from another hunter. It could be from coyotes, because last year's buck, I got Greg Litzinger and another buddy came out, and we were looking for that out. I don't want to get in that story about that shot in there or anything, but we got, and it was nothing but coyotes. He's like, Greg says, I think every coyote in Salem County is right here in this spot.
Wow.
Because
it's been on hunts like that.
Yeah. So you would think a lung liver or even a liver gut after 12 hours, 10, 12 hours, would be able to, it makes sense. Like, Yeah. Just bedded there. Like you get out quietly. It should be there. It should be there.
Yep.
Right. But
there's so many unknown things that could happen during that time that could push that deer out, give it just the adrenaline dump it needs for everything to clog up or whatever the case is. But no, I appreciate that support, man. And I hope other people see that. I mean, I think going back to hunting challenges, I've always wanted to be nothing but real, raw, authentic. I've gotten like bad messages and on my YouTube videos and Instagram posts, and yeah, I'm too old where I don't care. You know, I don't care what you think. I mean, you know, but I'm also a man of faith. Like, you know what I mean? So like, whatever, whatever makes you feel better. God bless you, man. You know, I'm good with that.
As long as you know what you're doing is right, and as long as you know that you are doing everything you possibly can to stay away or to do everything right, to follow the steps, to try to not make that happen. As long as you're practicing and stuff like that, you shouldn't have any regrets about it. You shouldn't take it to heart. So that's just my personal opinion, though.
I agree with you. And I think any responsible bow hunter should be out there by now, you know, at least shooting, you know, a few arrows every day, but being just, don't be the one to be like, let me just, here. Opening day 3 days away, let me see if my bow's okay. Don't do that. Like we and I think that even added a lot more frustration, because over the past 5 years since I've started this whole, like, I think it's been 5 years, the hunting challenge, like I've taken it all very, very seriously, like been very diligent about getting it, even if it's just a handful of arrows, they're going to be the most important handful of arrows that I sling down the range, you know, that type of thing. And I think like you prepare, I prepared a lot this past season, you know, from the physical aspect, losing weight, getting in shape and all those stuff, because when you do that, that's the mental side of things and everything along those lines. And like, man, I had a lot of conversations with God. I ain't gonna lie. Like, what's going on? What are you trying to teach me right now? You know what I mean?
So. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think anyone who gets out and hunts has those conversations, especially who goes through things like that, and just has those conversations. Like, all right, what? And even just not like even if you take the faith out of it, like the faith aspect out of it, which for me I never do, but like. It's even leaving the woods is I'm going, what did I learn? How did I become a better hunter today? You know, and things like that. And, then it's like, all right, God, you know, what are you trying to show me through being out here? At least that's how I am. But my second part of my question was, so you've had the hunting challenge, which I love that name, and I never put together with the hunting public. But we have a similar situation.
Well, that's
with
good.
We have a similar situation with Just One and Seek One. Everyone's always Seek, like, did you copy Seek One? And I'm like, no, this came from a season where we were literally like, dude, we just want to see one deer, like just one deer. So that's where our name came from. And all of a sudden it's like, hopefully people, don't care about that too much. But, How has this all now morphed into a podcast?
Yes. Okay. So very good question. I mean, so, maybe it was like 2 years ago. So Greg Litzinger, the bow hunting fiend on Instagram, and lives maybe 10 miles away from me, and Todd Freeman, UP bow hunter, is maybe 20 miles away from me. And both of those guys have been, you know, on podcasts throughout, you know, the country, and are well known. And I just kind of like reached out to them. I mean, they're awesome guys. And so over time, you know, I was just through messaging, you know, no different than what you guys and I were doing, like through Instagram. I just asked them, I said, hey, would you guys like to do like a kind of like interview thing for a YouTube video, just breaking down season by season. They're obviously game for it and everything. Mm-hmm. I think it's just kind of like, you know, stemmed from there. A couple of years ago, Todd had myself, Greg, and Clint from Truth from the Stand out to his Truth from the Stand podcast, deer hunting podcast, out to his place, and we all just kind of like hung out and did like saddle demonstrations, and I recorded that. That was, mm-hmm. you know, that was cool. And then Todd and I were kind of talking, like, look, man, I'm really thinking about starting a podcast. And he'd been thinking about starting a podcast too. And maybe a year went by. He's like, hey man, do you just want to do this together? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it and see what happens. And that's kind of how it started from. I mean, he definitely has, you know, more connections within the industry. One, he's older. he's not that much older than I am. But he's an incredible hunter too. Yeah. You know what I mean? And the dude is a heck of a storyteller. And he brings in a lot because he's a trad guy. So he brings in a lot from the traditional hunting community. But the woodsmanship from his side, it like trumps me big time. And it's I think it's a very good like yin and yang type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As far as I connect, we're both like very strong believers, which is awesome. And it's just, you know, it's just one of those things that just kind of came out of nowhere, but kind of made sense mm-hmm. to do it. And so we. Even before like the Seek Wilderness podcast, he was like, Seek Wilderness, go do epic stuff. That like, that's been his motive.
Yeah.
Like his whole life, like go do epic stuff because time's running out, man. Mm-hmm. Like he and I are at the age, like we want to be able to like pass on legacy and stuff like that. And I think one of the greatest legacies that I can pass on to my kids is, like, go do epic stuff and seek wilderness. Mm-hmm. And it's not in that tablet or TV that you're looking at. You know what I mean? So there's so much more out there that can bring you so much more joy, gratitude. A day of hunting, in a day of hunting, you can experience a lifetime.
Oh, absolutely. Really,
like, you think about all the emotions that we deal with in a lifetime. It's just repetitive, but mm-hmm. a day of hunting, you could very possibly experience the same thing. So I think that's kind of how it came about. And we're sure, I mean, you guys are doing great. Like I don't even know when you started, but like Todd and I are kind of looking at it like, well, we're not getting paid for anything, but you know what? We love talking about this stuff. So when the opportunity happens, we'll set up a recording. I think we started actually like a year ago, right around this time.
Nice.
So we have about 20 something episodes in or something like that. But yeah, so that's kind of how it started. Just like, hey, you know, you want to? All right, let's do it.
That's our story too. It was like, hey, you want to? Let's do it. But Deegan, do you have any more questions? Because I have one more, but I want to save it for kind of the end.
Well, I mean, I have a pretty generic question. So I was going through, I don't know if it was somebody, I couldn't really tell. I just kind of quickly scrolled past it, but talking about, you know, not being able to find deer and stuff, I was just curious, what kind of setup are you toting out into the woods every time you go? Or do you have multiple, or how does that work?
Yeah. So this is going to be my fifth year hunting from a saddle.
Okay.
Is that addressing your question? And so,
yeah, just generic. What all you tote now?
Yeah. Yeah. So I whatever tree suits me is my setup. And, And I will be honest with you, like, that was by far for me the best decision that I ever made. My encounters with deer went up exponentially. Being able to get, especially in the last like 2-3 years, to get those shot opportunities at the bucks, unfortunately, that I wounded, put me in those positions. I run a pure mobile setup. I will say though, for like winter bow, I ended up this past season getting a Novix lock-on stand because,
right.
Excuse me. The only reason why is because I haven't found I should put it this way. I was sick and tired of bringing out all the layers that I needed to stay warm. So I got an IWOM. If I don't know if you guys have heard of that, it's like a heater suit, but it's called IWOM.
Okay.
Which sits perfectly on the Novix stand. And we had a mild winter this year, mm-hmm. So I only had a couple of times to run it. But since I've learned, there are ways to use the IWOM suit in a saddle. And if that's the case, I will continue to use the saddle. It just works for me.
Yeah.
And currently I'm using the Method 2 from Latitude.
Okay.
Love that. I was using something from Tether before. They're the original, I think, the Manis. And, nothing gets Tether and what they're doing. I use their sticks.
Yeah.
Not the Tether 1. I use the Skeletors. I think it's Skeletors. So I carry 3 sticks, all with. My first stick is a 3-step aider.
Okay.
And then I use 2-step aiders on the next two. And very rarely am I using all 3 sticks.
Yeah.
In fact, all the encounters that I had with big bucks this year, I was two sticks and 5-step aiders high.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. So I wasn't that high. And I had the tethered platform, as far as that goes, that's what I'm using. And then I did stop self filming this past season just because I was having a lot of challenges for whatever reason, and it was kind of nice to take that break.
Mm-hmm.
I was missing everything. I just didn't want that extra
challenge on
distraction
there.
Or whatever. Yeah. Cause it is, but I've always been one, like, even with my, like, if it's, I will never be one to say, if I can't get the kill on video, I'm not going to shoot.
Absolutely.
No, I'm shooting. Yep. You know what I mean? So, so that's kind of where, and then this year I'll be running, again, the Method 2 from Latitude, probably just the same sticks, Skeletor sticks. I really want to get the Latitude sticks.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens with that. And I got a new Hoyt carbon bow. So
nice.
Went all in, and the reason why I was missing. So the past 2 years I've had contacts in. So I have to wear like, whatever they're called. I can't even remember what the prescription is, but
mm-hmm.
my contact prescription is for seeing far. So when I'm trying to line up sight and target, it's all just no bueno.
Yeah.
Try to line all that stuff up with contacts in. So I went with the ARD sight. I don't know if you guys heard of that adjustable mm-hmm. red dot.
Yep.
Sight. And, dude, I'm digging that.
Really?
It looks like that dot looks like it's on the target, which is perfect for somebody that's wearing contacts that are set to see far.
Huh.
And, I'm really looking forward to taking the bow and that sight out.
Yeah.
This fall for sure.
Hmm. That, I've seen that sight and I've been curious of it. So that's good to hear. I might have to look into one of those. But as we get a little, or as we get close to our time here, I wanted to ask, how, since you're a man of faith, how do you see hunting and your faith interacting? Because I always find it interesting how, you know, like, yeah, I mean, you're taking something's life, you're taking creation's life, and you still have this faith. So for you, how does that interaction work?
Well, we were given the call to tame the beasts of the earth. Mm-hmm. And for those listening, you can go Google search what verse says that, but I will tell you it's in the Old Testament. And that's kind of how I look at it. And I also look at it as an opportunity to provide the purest protein to my family. I think the other side of it too is that hour and a half before the sun rises, where I'm sitting in the stand because I got in early because I had to get in early, early morning. Like, there's no greater connection for me other than grabbing my guitar and just singing.
Yeah.
Songs that are breathed out of scripture.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more grounding or connecting to my faith, my God, than sitting in nature, listening to it wake up.
Yeah.
I mean, I just get chills just sharing that with
you. I was going to say, I have chills with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that it's an opportunity to reflect on so many things, like something that might seem as simple as thank you for my wife that can deal with me leaving the bed early, the family early to go do this. You know what I mean? I mean,
amen to that.
Some may seem that to be silly, but others may be like, amen, like that is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know,
it absolutely
so
is.
There's many things, man, but I think that one, like we're called to do that. Two, we know we're called to do that because of the joy we get from it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Whether we succeed or fail, and you can say you can put your succeed, whatever you call success, whatever you call failure, like, in whatever column you want, but whatever that came from that hunt was a gift. And I think it's up to us to see, like, I think we touched on it. Like, every single hunt, there's something to learn from it.
Yeah.
Every single hunt. And there's not a hunt that passes where I am very intentional about being thankful for this opportunity, and I always pray for, you know, a merciful kill if that opportunity arises, and I'll continue to do that even through the mishaps that have happened.
Yeah.
You know, God is trying to teach me something. You know, all I can do is continue to be faithful to what I believe he's called me to do. And that's the hunt, man. So
that's awesome.
That's what I'm going to do. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And I think there's hunting in heaven. I think we will be able to hunt in heaven.
There's
white tail in heaven. That's a place for me.
That is one of the
maybe that.
Go ahead. I was going to say, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, Maybe that big wide, I think it was a 10 point that somebody else shot 2 weeks later. Maybe I'll get to hunt him again, man.
Hey, that'd be cool.
There you go. There you go.
We'll count it all joy.
Amen to that. So as we wrap up here, we do a section called Around Our Campfire. And pretty much it's, you know, we're out hunting, sitting around a campfire, and, you know, we're just you know, sharing advice, what would be your piece of advice? Maybe it's to a newer hunter that's around our campfire, for just what would be your advice when it comes to hunting, fishing, anything outdoors?
Oh, man.
Put you on the spot.
That's a really good question. No, I like it. I think, especially for like this day and age, simply put, like, don't do it for the Instagram.
I like it.
Don't do it to impress others, man. This is your opportunity to, to conquer nature. Maybe not even conquer, but like to enjoy nature in a way that was only meant for you in that moment to enjoy nature. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like,
forget the competition. I'm like so sick of the competition. It's like ruining our passion of hunting or fishing.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So that would be my advice to somebody. Like,
that's really good advice. That's actually a piece of advice we haven't got before. But I think it's really good advice because there's so many people who want to get into hunting, especially like new hunters want to get into hunting.
Yeah.
And they get on Instagram and they, you know, type in hunting and then they look at the hunting hashtag. And it's just a bunch of these big bucks taken off, you know, farms or different things. And, you know, no, not taking away from those guys who put in the work. But a lot of those are just like, hey, they just paid $6,000 to harvest that deer off of a ranch in Texas.
Exactly.
You know, hunting isn't. You know, for me, we've said this a lot on our podcast is it's not the kill is probably the worst part in our opinion, because that's the moment you're taking something's life. The moments leading up to it, where you're seeing a bald eagle fly or two bald eagles soar down a river bottom below you and you're hunting over it that no one else besides you and God are seeing. And it just those moments are really cool and really special. And, you know, a lot of people don't get those opportunities. So while Instagram and, you know, like the hunting public and people like that, while you can learn stuff on there, know that a lot of hunting is, you know, sitting in nature. You can be bored. You can be praying. You can do all sorts of stuff leading up to that moment where you have that deer come in and, you know, you're blessed with being able to take this deer and harvest it and put it to good use for your friends and friends and family and all that. So I really like that piece of advice. But
yeah, it is, man. And it's one of those things like, but it has to be a decision that you make. Like, you know, it's so easy to compete. I mean, we all see it. Like even there's good. I mean, look, we connected because of social media. Good thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But social media is also like we said on our podcast. Like there's people that will see, oh my gosh, this is what it takes to be successful. I'm not willing to do that. I can't do that. Like I don't have the time to do that. 365 a year, like what? I can't do that,
right?
You know, but there's an ultimate meaning. Like you have to be able to be humble enough to, I guess, at the end of the day, just embrace it for what it is.
Yeah,
you know, just you and nature.
Yep.
At the end of the day, you know.
Yeah. So. I agree. Well, guys, we'll wrap this episode up with that. That is, I think, a perfect place to end this. John, really appreciate you being on. Deegan, thanks for filling in.
No problem.
Guys, if you guys enjoyed this episode, make sure you go on to whatever platform you're listening, Apple, Spotify, all the fun ones that are out there. Leave us a rating, a review. That helps us get our content out to more people and share people like John who are doing great things. And, you know, they're not these people that are 365 hunting all the time, you know, paying all this money, killing this big buck. He's just, you know, your average guy getting out there, getting the job done, finding big bucks. I mean, it says something that 3 years in a row he had a shot at a big buck. That says something right there. He knows what he's doing. So go follow his account. John, where can people find your podcast, your personal account, all of that?
Yeah, so the Instagram page is The Hunting Challenge. If you want to look for the podcast, it's Seek Wilderness. YouTube channel is Seek Wilderness Now. And that's pretty much it. I've given up off Facebook. Todd still goes to Facebook and stuff like that, but I've given up on Facebook. But that's kind of the Hunting Challenge. Is just type in Seek Wilderness Podcast in Google, and you'll probably find us somewhere.
Absolutely, and you can always
thank you guys.
Absolutely, you can always go on to our social media and look at who we're following. We're following both those accounts. Definitely check out their podcast or YouTube. The YouTube video from 2020, that buck that you shot. Really, honestly, there were some parts of it that I took and I'm like, that was great editing or different things. And I want to to put into our video. So keep it up. We really appreciate you being on tonight. And we'll go ahead and wrap this one up. Guys, don't forget, all it takes is just one.